go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Deep Space High, Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we talk about the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Chris. It's been a while since we recorded.
Yeah, it has been. The time flies, I guess. You know, a lot of events have happened since then.
Well, yeah, when we recorded Mandalorian, we were doing it every week, and then we recorded a couple episodes in a row. And then it's been like 2 or 3 weeks since we've recorded last, so it is
all over the place.
Yeah, and I think this will be an interesting episode because we prepped for this one a little differently than we usually do.
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't know. So
this will be a fun, probably more conversationally based episode.
Yeah, I think so. So, all right, do you want to just jump right into it, or?
Yeah, we can go ahead and jump right into it.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
Cool, so what do we have in store? Or what are we talking about today?
So, this time on Deep Space High, we are talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 1, Episodes 10, 11, and 12, Part 4 of our conversation on Star Trek Discovery. So, Season 1 is coming to a close. We are on the final stretches. And coming back, you know, we spoke last time, Episode 9 was the mid-season finale, so this is technically the start of, we'll say, quote unquote, the second half, even though we're
two-thirds of the way through.
Yeah, most of the way through it. So we start off right off the bat with a Jonathan Frakes directed episode. I guess you didn't catch that.
No, I didn't. I did not.
But I knew he was involved in the show a little bit. I couldn't remember where.
Yeah, Jonathan
Frakes. I think
Frakes,
he only directed one this season.
Did he? Yeah, and he did a lot of directing jobs, or especially towards the end of the Star Trek series. The last couple seasons, he really started, you know, doing a lot more directing, and you know, I guess that's just kind of the direction he went with after acting. Because he didn't really do much other than Star Trek.
No, not that I'm aware of. And for those of you who don't know, Jonathan Frakes is Commander Riker. Just in case anyone out there was a little unsure of that, I thought I would throw that out there. So yeah, this was his directed episode, and you can kind of feel his veteran Star Trek presence on this episode.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't bad. I mean it was an interesting one. They're a little bit slow to figure out that they're in the Mirror Universe, but then again, that's, you know, to be expected.
Yeah, and I think really the way they determined it is Saru says something. He's like, we're at the location we set our coordinates to. We're at the center of the galaxy, you know, distance-wise. We are at the right position. But he's like, nothing is where it's supposed to be other than that.
Yep.
So that's when you find out, all right, we're in another universe. And this is kind of where you get another in-depth look at the Mirror Universe, the Terrans, and this one really goes in depth how they replicate the uniforms. They kind of get this crew all squared away. They even change the computers on the ship and have the logo or the emblem painted in front of the captain's chair, and all. They went the whole nine yards in case they had to, you know, do a visual communique.
Right. Well, I mean, it was interesting watching this one. It was very consistent with the Star Trek universe, and that was one of the things that, or I should say, one of my critiques was I'm kind of glad that they stuck with that Star Trek Enterprise storyline of the Defiant, because for those of you Trekkies who have watched all of the series, you know that that Discovery, or not Discovery, the Defiant timeline that they're talking about, how the Defiant came back in time, and that's how there's already, you know, a connection between the two universes. That comes from the last, not the finale, but I think the episode, or the two episodes before, because it was a two-part, of the final season of Star Trek Enterprise. And in that finale of Enterprise, Jonathan Franks was also part of, not just directing wise, but acting wise. He actually made a guest appearance in the finale of Enterprise. So I wouldn't be surprised if he actually did some directing work with that episode, and that's why he came in to do the directing for this one.
Could have been tried to get, because all three of these episodes take place in the Mirror Universe, and I'm pretty sure the last three episodes take place in the Mirror Universe. So it was probably smart for him to come in and spearhead the first episode taking place in the Mirror Universe for this series. And
director-wise, Jonathan Franks is the closest to anybody who really understands Gene Roddenberry's vision of, you know, the Star Trek universe, but there's just not very many great directors that truly understand the Star Trek universe. But
well, Gene Roddenberry's son pretty good one. is one of the producers of the show. I think he is involved in all of the new Star Trek. Yeah, Eugene Roddenberry, I don't know how involved he is, but he is. You do see him in the credits when they're rolling. He is one of the producers.
Oh, nice. I never actually look at the credits, believe it or not.
I don't usually, but his name pops up here and on Picard, so you kind of just, I mean, every now and then you kind of see it, make the connection. So his son is involved with New Trek.
Mm. Well, let's get into the episode a bit. I'm curious, what did you, how was your reaction when you found out that Tilly was actually the captain of Discovery in this universe? I know we're jumping ahead a bit, but I'm just curious.
Well, the first thing that popped in my head was, I remember in our first episode that we talked about covering Discovery, I raised the point that maybe she was, you know, maybe a little bit on the autistic spectrum. And after watching these episodes, I want to backtrack a little bit, because I don't think she is. I just think she's a little quirky, which, you know, a lot of us are. We all have our quirks. And to find out she was the captain, it made a lot of sense, because if you think about the Mirror Universe, usually the people you encounter or your other self is pretty much the opposite of what you are. I mean, the Terran Empire is pretty much the exact opposite of the Federation. But we see that it's not surprising that she could be someone on this show who is very reserved and timid, where in the Mirror Universe she might be forceful and dominant and really take charge. So it's a little bit of a shock, but if you sit back and think about it, it makes sense. It makes sense with how, if you think about how the Mirror Universe works, it's like, okay, you could see it.
Nice.
Was that, did you think I would put that kind of conclusion together?
No. I had no idea where you're going for a while, but it was an interesting one.
It makes sense.
Yeah. How do you think she did acting wise? Because, I mean, that was kind of funny how, you know, they're about to blow up the ship. They're threatening to. She finds out, oh, shit, it's Cadet. Really, he's the captain. And now she's got to take the captain's chair. And, you know, she kind of fumbled a lot. And it was, acting wise, I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, here's what I'll tell you. Watching the scenes, like when she takes the captain's chair for the first time, it was really awkward and a little bit cringeworthy. But I'm pretty sure that's what they were going for. So you got to give her kudos to of how she acted that scene. I think they hit the spot for what I wanted. Someone who is timid and reserved trying to act all tough and badass. And it came out a little odd and awkward. And I think that's very fitting for her character.
It's got to be tough acting wise, you know, to be a performer trying to give a bad performance while performing. You know what I mean?
Might be easier than you think. I don't know. I've never acted outside of elementary school, so.
Yeah, I know.
And that was just standing up and reading lame lines.
I think the only play I ever acted in was a third grade play where I played Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, I think I was in one play with, and I have one line, and I don't even know what the stupid line was. I just remember not wanting to do the part at all.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it was so idiotic.
What was it?
I don't know. I honestly don't remember. I just remember throwing. As a kid, I was a little temperamental and had a little bit of a temper.
A little bit? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was the extent of my acting, not wanting to do a play that was terrible. I mean, I think when we had drama classes after that, we did some sketches for inside the class, but that was about it. So it could be tough, it could not. We are no experts on acting.
Nope, that is for damn sure. All right, well, let's see what else happened.
This episode was, the Discovery's having to work on the fly because they're in this mirror universe. They know Lorca is not the captain of the Discovery because Tilly is. So they're kind of scrambling. And they find out Lorca and Brenham aren't on the Discovery at all, that Brenham was the captain of the Shenzo and tasked to hunt down Lorca because Lorca in the mirror universe is a traitor who tried to stage a coup against the Emperor. So that was them finding out, and then, you know, they come up with this plot. They need to get the Defiant data that the Terran Empire has, and in order to do that, they need to be on a Terran ship, which is, so their bright idea is for Brenham and Lorca to quote unquote churn up and Brenham take her ship back so she could access the necessary data, which is an interesting storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so.
Especially the involvement of Tyler, because we've seen Tyler come off the hinges a little bit.
Yeah, and he does it again when he gets or approaches trying to get the data from the Klingon wreckage. We found out that we kind of skipped ahead a little bit, but I guess that's when they found out that this is not their universe or not like their universe, given the fact that they found Vulcans and Andorians on the Klingon ship in the wreckage.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those, I mean, this has happened several times where Tyler has anything to do with a mission involving a Klingon. He has, I won't say snapped, but he lost it a little bit. You know, he lost it when they were boarding the Ship of the Dead. He lost it in this episode again. I mean, a little bit, when he was going onto the Klingon ship to retrieve the necessary data.
Oh, yeah, and it's clear throughout the episode and through these next ones that he's kind of fallen apart a bit.
I don't see why the captain and Brenham even continue to trust him after he was having a mini, what would be the good word, PTSD attack, breakdown, whatever, during the retrieval of the data from the wrecked Klingon ship. He obviously had a full-blown PTSD meltdown when they rescued Admiral Cornwallis in episode 8 or 9, whichever episode it was. And there's been a lot of oddities in his behavior where he would have to question his fitness to be able to go on these intense and important and critical away missions.
Yeah, I mean, part of it could be the captain doesn't know. I think Brenham knows more about it than the captain. And the captain, because, you know, what happened with the admiral, you know, he might read the report on what happened, but they might not bring it up or mention it. So the captain might not know about his physical or mental well-being, where Brenham is trying to do what she can to kind of snap him out of it. But I don't think when he has that breakdown trying to retrieve the data core, I don't think the captain knew the extent to which that he was breaking down. You know, nobody knew that he was going to
True, but Admiral Cornwallis did. She did warn the captain where it just he was in a Klingon prison for so long. He just didn't seem. I mean, he passed all his psyche vows, but it just didn't seem right. There was something off about it, and everyone swept it under the rug and left him at a very critical position as chief of security.
I don't know. Maybe he needed him for something, and he was willing to overlook it.
Obviously, yeah, he had to be willing to overlook it. Then the thing is, you know, before they go on their away mission, Tyler goes to Dr. Culber and wants to have some tests done to make sure he's all right, because his memories are coming back to him, and they're a little more clearer and clearer. And he's, you know, Culber's like, I'm going to have to ground you because something's off. And then he kills Culber. And the thing that bothered me with this is, like, how did no one know? I mean, he snapped his neck. He loses sense of time. He makes his way to the transporter room. But no one is able to find the good old doctor until how long later?
Well, I mean, it didn't seem like much long later. He had that sense of urgency. Like, I'm on this away mission. They're waiting for me. I got to go. And, you know, the doctor's like, no, you're not going anywhere. And that's when he snapped his neck.
Well, still, what, a few minutes? I mean, no one goes into the sick bay. No one.
Well, not enough to, I guess not enough to alert them that, you know, they're dead. You know, there was enough time passed to where somebody, because there was nobody in the sick bay. And the only other person that was in there was Stemmons or whatever it is.
Stemmons.
Yeah. And he was in, you know, Lulu Land, tripping out on some shrooms.
Oh, he was in a full blown. Oh no, coma came later.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like there's nobody else there. So if nobody walks in and sees him with the dead body, nobody's gonna figure it out. It's enough time to, you know, for him to walk over to the transport room, go on their mission, and they not have anything to do with him, or not being able to put two and two together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because this.
I don't know if it was this episode or the next one, but they thought it was Stemmons who did it.
Yeah, that was the next episode, because this episode ends. No real closure on, you know, what happens with Culber and his body in 10, but the next episode there is. They suspect Stemmons came out of it for a little bit, and he was already violent before, so Saru is, I'm not convinced, but his hunch says Stemmons killed Culber.
Right, because we've already seen great feats of strength, and, you know, it wouldn't be too difficult for him to, you know, snap his neck. But, and I think that I don't know if it was the end of 10 or the beginning of 11, but I'm pretty sure that the ending scene was him holding, Stemmons holding, you know, the dead doctor. I can't remember what his name is. I do remember that image, so, you know, if they walked in and saw him holding him.
I think there was the start of 10, because what was happening is there was a repair going on in the hallway just outside of sick bay, and there was one Starfleet personnel, like, trying to fix some of the lights or something, and she saw Stemmons holding Culber.
Right.
I think that was the start of 11.
It might be. I guess we'll go to 11 then.
Yeah, we can talk about 11, because essentially 10 is, you know, they figure out they're in the mirror universe, they set up a plan, and they start to execute the plan. 11 is kind of them hanging out in the mirror universe. You know, you find out the Kelpians are pretty much a slave to the Terrans and act as their, well, I was going to say ward, maybe maids.
Servants, you know.
Servants, yeah, that'd be a good one. Servants. And because we see Saru's mirror universe version is the captain's aide or the captain's servant. So he bathes her, he feeds her, he whatever she needs, he's at his at her beck and call.
You know, Burnham's kind of going through, to start 11, you know, it's kind of going through Burnham's day. She's talking about how it's just different. You know, everything yeah. looks so similar, but it's just, you know, even the light was a bit different. Hint, hint, wink, wink. You know, as she's going, she's kind of playing out this role.
Yeah, it's kind of like a monologue, just to kind of, you know, to give everyone a sense some time has passed, maybe a day, maybe 2 days.
And then and then she had going through her day, getting up, going straight to executions, where apparently executions with the Terran Empire is beaming people into space, which is kind of an interesting way to kill people. I mean, it seems pretty simple and effective to execute them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the vacuum of space kills humans in like 30 seconds. It's not instant, not even. But it's pretty quick.
It's 10 to 15 seconds, I think.
Yeah. Because it's like, how does that work? It essentially, like, your blood boils, but it's not because of, it's not from like heat, like normal boiling. It's more like the lack of atmosphere. Your everything just kind of vaporizes, or
I don't know.
Blood just kind of vaporizes or disappears. And I don't know.
Because the way it's always been portrayed in sci-fi is the, you know, they're left gasping for air, and then their bodies pretty much turn into a giant human popsicle.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened here.
Yeah, and that's how it looked. But what happens to the anatomy and physiology, I don't really know.
Yeah, I'm curious the actual science behind it. But maybe something to look forward for another episode, or maybe somebody could leave a comment and talk. Somebody smarter than us, maybe a doctor, could tell us what happens.
Or I'm sure we can go track down a clip from Mythbusters. That show ran forever. I'm pretty sure we can find something on it.
But could you imagine, like, looking up at a shooting star and thinking, oh, cool, I'm going to make a wish off of that. And turns out that shooting star was just a dead body from an execution just floating out throughout space.
Yeah, that's not how that works.
I mean, yeah, it kind of does. It
just keeps floating throughout space. Shooting stars are large.
It's just, you know, meteorites or something burning up in the atmosphere. That's what a shooting star is.
Yeah, but like much larger than a human being.
True, but I mean, I would imagine that if you had no light pollution, not like we have here, and you got a clear sky, you'd still be able to see it.
Yeah, no. Because I think even with no light pollution, you can't even see the space station.
Well, you don't have to actually see the actual star.
You might see the reflection, but the human body is not really reflective. I don't think it works that way.
Well, I mean, you're not going to actually see a human body flying across, but I'm just saying you'd see like a shooting star or something burning up in the atmosphere. You're like, oh, look, it's a shooting star. And it turns out to be, you know, dead bodies from.
I mean, okay. If from that perspective, yeah, possibly. But I still don't know. I don't know. Oh, let's move on.
You over here. It's supposed to be Jake. All right. Well, let's see what else.
Here's a point of topic. You know, Lorca is Brenham's prisoner, essentially, because I think we discussed earlier that she was hunting him due to orders from the Emperor. And they have a very unique torture device where it's like being in a phone booth, and the way it looks is like being electrocuted, but it seems like it's more than that.
They go into that, which, you know, I should bring up. I don't know if I brought this up earlier, but this is a lot of the episodes this is all based off of those two episodes from Star Trek Enterprise. Those last couple, I think it was a two-part episodes in season 4. If you guys want to go check it out, go check it out. But what that is it's a torture chamber created by Dr. Phlox on the NX. I don't know if it's the NX-1 on. I think it's the ISS Enterprise in this one universe. But what they did was they stimulate the nerve centers throughout your body, and they constantly rotate through different nerve systems to constantly give you, well, constant pain. And because they're not actually doing anything physical to you, there's no numbing of the sensation of pain over time. So you can just get constant pain and new sources of pain, and your body doesn't become, you know, used to it over several hours of use. So it's a form of torture chamber that uses direct impacts into your nervous system.
Yeah, it's like taking a bunch of needles and just poking at your nerves, like, and hitting the nerve directly.
Pretty much.
That sounds terrible. I mean, it looks terrible.
Yes. And imagine just being in there for, you know, days. I mean, I'm sure when the captain was planning this mission, he was like, oh shit, I didn't think I was going to just be in a torture chamber for several long days while you're getting, you know, other people giving you massages and feeding you dinner and being pampered, you know.
Or did he?
Yeah, he probably did.
Well, the thing is, it's this whole... I mean, obviously, this stuff is going somewhere. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll stop. Mm-hmm. I know we're kind of walking around some bushes here, but let's talk about the plot of 10 real quick. Or 11, sorry. We already went through 10. You know, 10 is... It feels like an episode where the Emperor's testing Brenham. The Emperor gives Brenham a mission. It's they found the location of pretty much where these rebels were, you know, led by a Klingon, and her mission was to go and destroy the encampment. And it wouldn't put an end to their conflict, but it would definitely, it's cripple them. It's like, you know, killing Palpatine, you know, the Empire's not gone, but really hinders what they can do without leadership.
Right. I'm curious, did you, you know, were you thinking about Star Wars when, They kind of gave the orders? It's like, oh, the Emperor gave them orders to destroy the rebel base. It's like, how can you not think of Star Wars like that when they set it up like that?
No, not really.
Really?
I was more focused on... Honestly, I don't know what I was more focused on. But no, Star Wars didn't pop up into my mind about it.
I don't know. Maybe it was just reading the Star Wars books recently. Just kind of got my mind towards Star Wars a bit.
Maybe. But Brenham uses this, you know, her first officer, who I think is the, is it comms officer, tactical?
For which one?
The redheaded, like in their version, it's the redhead, but half her head shaved because she has some cybernetics on the side.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because of when she was on the Shinjo and it was destroyed, she had like brain problems.
Right, but you know, that's her number one in the mirror universe.
Right.
You know, but you know, not injured. So she's like, okay, I'm gonna ready the torpedoes and bombs, and Brenham's like, no, I'm gonna go handle this myself, get my hands dirty, when she's really gonna go negotiate and she wants to figure out the Klingons' way of thinking in order to unite the Klingons, the Vulcans, the Andorians, the Wookiees, the giant space lizards, and I'm trying to think of whatever alien species I can think of, but I guess Predator. Yeah, Predator. I'm just naming off random species from all franchises.
Jesus.
Yeah, and it just so happens she gets down there. They're like, they're attacked, but she's like, I come in peace. And this is kind of when the episode gets interesting. And my ears perked up because 10 was... My ears didn't really perk up. I wasn't, you know, like pulled into it. But I got a little pulled into it here when you see all the different species. And then Sarek comes out. And he's like, coincidentally, oh, there's the only way to know your true intentions is through a mind meld through Master Sarek. So here he is. And then she's like, oh, fuck. Okay, well, at least I'm in the clear because he was, you know, he was her adopted dad in her universe, which she kind of sees.
Yeah, and she knows. She's her intentions are good and she'll be fine.
Until Lieutenant Ash Tyler becomes full Winter Soldier, gets activated, and then goes after his mirror version, the mirror version of Volk. Volk.
I don't know if it... like an activation, more like a triggering, because he just didn't like the way that he was, the other Volk was talking about associating with other species, because I guess it went against Kayla, or not Kayla's, it's Takuma's teaching, and I guess he just
thought he was a traitor and was like, you know, fuck you.
Because was it? It was before they left when L'Oreal, the I lost the joke. the L'Oreal makeup Klingon tried to activate them all Winter Soldier style, and that's kind of where I was thinking about it, because she said all the right words and but it didn't activate.
It didn't activate him right. Yeah.
Yeah. Long story short, Ash Tyler is a. It's pretty much
so
it's
essentially
Volk who was.
They crushed his bones and his body and shrank his body and kind of implanted, like a personality, or they stole this guy's personality, because I think Ash Tyler was a real guy and he was really a prisoner, but they kind of, you know, stole his essence and put it in, made T'Ku or Volk look like.
Here's the best way they put it. They took a Klingon, performed surgery, turned him human and to look like this Ash Tyler. And then what they really did was took Ash Tyler's DNA, recreated his consciousness, uploaded it into this body, but they left Volk's consciousness kind of as an underlayer that would, with code words, kind of like, there's my Winter Soldier reference, where if you said the right words in the right sequence, you could activate that underlying personality and get Volk.
Right.
So that's what they did. I think that was revealed. Yeah, it was this episode.
Yeah, it was this one.
I was trying to think about it. I watched them all back to back to back, so they kind of blended. And you know, these three episodes kind of just felt like one long episode, almost like a movie. You could stitch these together and really make it a movie.
I feel like that's what they did for the season. I mean, I'm sure that's pretty much what they do for every show. But it's like, yeah, Let's just get one idea and let's see how long we can stretch it out for.
Yeah. Yeah, this back half, these last six episodes, is like Star Trek Discovery, Mirror Universe, Part 1 and Part 2.
You only got five, you got these last, what, five, six episodes are in the Mirror Universe? I guess it would be six.
Yeah, because I think they jump back to the normal universe during the finale. One.
Yeah.
So, we'll see, though. That's the next episode, but what were we talking about? Oh, Tyler going off on Volk.
Yeah, and it's funny, he lost.
Yeah, he lost.
Counterpart.
But he spoke Klingon, and the Klingon obviously recognized the language, but it was like, how dare you speak in that ancient dialect or dead dialect? What was his exact words?
Ancient tongue, I think.
Ancient tongue, yeah.
Or forgotten tongue, I'm sorry.
Yeah, forgotten tongue. Yeah, like kind of like Latin. Yeah, so that was interesting exchange. I know you questioned that in the notes. What are your thoughts on? It seems like Klingons don't really speak Klingon. It looks like they're an English-based species now.
I don't know, because,
or at least in the Mirror Universe, they are.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, because like the Mirror Universe is kind of in line with the way that previous Star Treks have set up the Mirror Universe. The rebellion was originally Vulcans, Andorians, you know, the core species. But I guess when the Empire expanded to encompass, tried to take the Klingons joined sides. And then eventually, continuing on down the road, the rebellion ends up winning. And then the Klingons, Cardassians, and Bajorians form an alliance to suppress the humans. So it makes sense that they have an old dialect that they still use in their universe, that because of the rebellion, they were forced to switch to like English because to form this alliance. And that would make
Which
sense
is weird, because if their enemy is Terran, they wouldn't really understand English. They would maybe speak Vulcan or Andorian or Klingon. Or
not necessarily.
Well, if the human species has never, they've never aligned themselves with an alien species.
Conquered, and they conquer are not going to learn the languages of the people they conquered. They're going to make the people they conquered
learn the language, and this is a rebellion, and these Vulcans, and you know, they had to probably learn English and before they rebelled.
Okay. Good point. Good point. Good point. Okay. Oh, so Brenham strikes the deal. She's like, you know, I'm here to destroy you behalf of the Emperor, and I will not destroy you in exchange for telling me how the hell you've got all these different species working together. And it's like, really? You need to ask that question? I get, you know, he's your enemy in your universe, but what is it? It's a, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, as said by Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest.
I know. Well,
yeah.
Is that in Galaxy Quest?
No, it's not. It was a joke.
I know, but I'm like, that's a joke. I had to think about that for a second. Like, wait, was that really? Was that quote?
No.
I know it's from something else, but.
No. I think it's Art of War or some shit like that.
No, it was a like an ancient Persian prince said it to an Indian prince, and then they ended up betraying him and ended up killing him.
Long story short, they united under a common enemy.
Right. Which it makes sense. I guess it's a reveal for, you know, for them, but that's something that the Star Trek universe kind of already knew. If you, you know, watch The Undiscovered Country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Undiscovered Country takes place after this.
Yeah, it's several years, but yeah, I know. That's why I'm like the Star Trek universe.
But still,
universe,
I mean, it's fandom. Basic logic. There's Terrans who are xenophobic and hate anyone who's not human. Okay, so everyone who isn't human is going to band together and work together to overthrow this threat. Mm-hmm. It only makes sense.
Yep.
So it was a weird way to fish that out. In my humble opinion.
Yeah.
You know, then she gives them an hour to escape, and then that plan goes awry because she finds out
kind of well, given the fact that what's his name, Tyler, ends up kind of betraying her while she's down there. You know, she comes back, says, "Oh, I got the information I needed," and when she gets back, and then you know, she finds out that, you know, Tyler's Volk and tries to kill her. It kind of everything falls into place for, you know, why.
Where I was referencing the plan fell apart was giving them the hour to escape before destroying their encampment. I was specifically referencing that, not her mission to go down there and get the information she needed.
Right. Well, I mean, it seems like that evacuation worked out perfectly when they got back. And why she didn't have an excuse to blow him up right as she got back and got the data because of the situation with Tyler and them betraying her. It kind of gave her an excuse to elongate that time for them to escape.
Right. So she told the rebels, "Hey, you got an hour. I can give you an hour, and then I got to bombard your encampments."
Mm-hmm.
But before the hour's up and before the evacuation is done, that's when the Emperor ship warps in and sends all its torpedoes and kills everyone.
Yep.
That's the part of the plan I'm referring that goes awry.
Yep. I wonder how much time passed because, you know, she managed to get all that. She managed to execute, or air quote, execute.
Air quote.
Tyler. Discovery ends up picking up Tyler while...
Which brings up my place. Next point here in a second, but I'll let you finish your thoughts.
What were my thoughts?
I don't know.
I don't remember. God damn it. We were talking about
Tyler.
Tyler was killed.
Betraying.
And then
executed, quote unquote, because he was picked up by Discovery.
Right.
Okay, anyway, we'll go to my next point because
you go to your point. Maybe I'll remember.
Point I was gonna bring up, they execute Tyler and they use him to transfer the pretty much futuristic floppy disk. By putting it in his holster, teleporting him out to, teleporting him out to execute him. Discovery is there to pick him up, but I mean, we obviously know she gets a message to Discovery to be in the area. But I was under the impression that the Discovery was off doing its own thing. It wasn't, you know, they weren't like flying together.
Yeah, I was kind of under that same impression. I remember where my train of thought was going though. The point that I was going was the time frame. you know, what's that time frame them getting back to the Emperor arriving? Because, you know, they executed Tyler. She managed to get the captain out of the torture chamber and have a conversation with him before, the, you know, finding out the Emperor arrived. So
I think it was less than it. It had to be less than the hour because she knew that she was trying to get the ship to stop firing upon the encampment because there wasn't enough time to pass. So,
right. Yeah.
It's maybe half an hour, maybe 45 minutes.
Yeah. It's tough to convince the Emperor to stop firing on a ship. I think she kind of has it out right there. So.
But back to what we were discussing, where did the Discovery come from? It had to be within teleport or transporter range, which is a pretty close distance.
Yeah. Or, you know, what? I was going to say, it could have done a short range spore jump and jumped in and picked it up.
How? Stemmons is
short range. Use the.
I don't think they would risk it.
Yeah, you might be right, but.
So that's something. That's a question I had that I want to answer. Where the hell was the Discovery? Were they working together?
It's a good question. Good question that I don't know the answer to.
I don't either.
All right.
And I wonder if we missed it.
We might have, or they just didn't explain it. You know, trying to keep that mystery, like, oh, she executed him. Oh no, wait, there's Discovery. So
yeah, and the big reveal at the end of this episode is that Mirror Universe Giorgio is the Empress.
Yep. Well, Emperor. Which
Emperor, Empress, same thing.
There's no gender in the future in this timeline, so there's no distinction.
Well, they do call her the mother of the fatherland, so there is somewhat of a distinction.
Yeah, but not with Emperor.
Okay, whatever. I'm not getting into it.
All right, well, let's move on to episode 12. So you got, Lorca and Brenham, you know, heading over to the flagship.
Yeah, because, at the start of this episode, after the events that happened in the last episode, Brenham was called to the Emperor's flagship. And it seemed like this ship I was under the impression it was the Emperor ship who warped in, fired the torpedoes. But it might have been someone else sent to finish the mission. Because Brenham and Lorca had to take a shuttle and warp to the Empress's ship.
Huh.
You catching my drift? Because, you know, at the end of 11, which I didn't look up the names of these for whatever reason, but at the end of episode 11, you're under the impression the Emperor comes in to clean up Brenham's mess, but then Brenham and Lorca at the start of 12 have to warp off to the Emperor ship.
Yeah,
it's a little confusing.
I didn't notice that, but that's because I didn't rewatch the last one before we recorded this one. I watched that one like a week ago, so I don't remember it as well as I do the other two.
When I was watching, I was like, these episodes aren't bad. They're, you know, there's some logistical issues. But now that we're talking it out, it's like, okay, there are some things that are going on that I just don't quite get.
Yeah. So for the episode titles, episode 10 was Despite Yourself. 11 was The Wolf Inside. And 12 was Vaulting Ambition.
So in this Vaulting Ambition, well, we learn a lot. We learn a lot. Giorgio in this universe is Brenham's adoptive mother.
Yeah.
Which,
you know, I hate to say it, there is actually, well, I mean, I don't know how Giorgio became emperor, but it doesn't entirely surprise me, given that at the end of Star Trek Enterprise, Hoshi Sato ended up taking the Defiant and seizing power and becoming Empress, Empress Sato. So I know it's a different namesake, but might be
connected.
Yeah, that might be the descendant.
Descendant? Yeah, it could be. So yeah, you learn Brenham's the adoptive daughter of Giorgio. What else do we learn? Oh, well, I guess, all right, I'm not going to beat around the bush anymore. We find out towards the end of this episode, Lorca is Mirror Universe Lorca. At some point, he crossed into Brenham's universe and the Federation universe, and kind of puzzle pieced himself in, so to speak, somehow, yeah. some way. Now, and we get a backstory.
Yeah, did she figure it out, or did the Emperor just straight up tell her? Because she's...
So, okay, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, because you did just say you haven't seen the episode in a week. So, what was happening is the Emperor and Brenham were talking. Brenham was, like, about to be executed by the Emperor for treason. And Brenham spills the beans. I'm not from your universe. I'm from my own universe. Here is Giorgio's Starfleet badge that they have analyzed and determined Brenham was telling the truth. So they're having a conversation. I think it's in the throne room.
Oh yeah. And then she ends up, she being the Emperor, ends up killing all of the lords that were present in the room when she told them that she was from another universe.
Yeah. Except for one, when she's like, I'll make you governor of whatever system. If you just keep your fucking mouth shut.
Right.
So, but what happens after that is they're talking and Giorgio opens up a window, and I guess the center of her ship is kind of powered by some sort of sun or fusion reactor, which is very bright, and she winces and turns away because, you know, she's sensitive to light. And that's when the dots are connected, that Lorca, who is also sensitive to light, is not her Lorca, it's the mirror universe Lorca, which, funny enough, Brenham saw as a father figure who ended up falling, I guess, for each other. So, and that's when she connects the pieces that Lorca from the mirror universe was captain of Federation Discovery, tracked Brenham down, had a release from prison because of the connection he had with mirror universe Brenham and them being in love and boning.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, so, I remember that part.
But yeah, so she doesn't straight up tells him. It was more of a
reveal.
Okay, sees so, Giorgio's reaction to the light, and then all the pieces fell together.
Well, yeah, and that's why I did that for the start of episode 11, hint, hint, wink, wink, that she noticed that even the light was different in this universe, that there was a, and that the Captain Lorca, in the previous episodes has had eye problems and problems with his vision, yep. has to take medication specifically for his sensitivity to light. So,
yep.
That was yeah. kind of the biggest connection to be made there.
Yeah, and then, you know, Lorca's getting tortured because I guess the commander of the ship is pissed because Lorca used to date his sister and Lorca broke it off. So he's being, like, tortured and this commander kills one of his constituents and then he fakes like he's dying to get out of it and then kills this commander. Now he's on the loose in the ship.
Mm-hmm. And he knew the name of the sister.
Ava.
Yep. Which confirmed
that. And that just confirmed everything that Brenham had theorized.
Yep. Well, hang on. There's one thing that I did want to talk about. It was a little bit earlier, but I don't remember. What was the name of the species? So the...
Kelpians.
So...
Suru species.
Exactly. So... Just before this confrontation and before the Emperor almost had her executed as a traitor, she invited him or burned him to dinner and had her choose between three Kelpians. And I think one of them was Saru, wasn't it?
No, I think Saru's still on the Shenzo.
Yeah.
I think it's just three Kelpians.
Yeah, and she ended up picking one of the Kelpians and... That was one of the Kelpians that they ended up killing and eating for dinner. So I think even the Empress was kind enough to give Brenham her, what was it, one of the tentacles, the fear tentacles?
Yeah, the ganglia,
yeah. I think is what they
Ooh. Call it.
Ooh, that's got to be awkward.
Oh, and what's going to be awkward is when she reunites with Saru and is like, yeah, I didn't see any of your species, sorry.
Yeah.
And then has to hide that from him.
Yeah, well, how do you tell her or tell Saru that you were forced into a situation where you had to eat one of his species?
Easy, you don't.
Well, I'm sure he'll eventually find out. I think he does eventually find out.
I honestly don't remember, but if I was her, I, you know... She didn't know. She thought maybe that was just going to be her servant being on the ship, and didn't realize that she was picking up or picking her dinner.
I don't know. I think she might have had an idea, because I remember when the Emperor asked her to choose, she was like, you know, you shouldn't have any hesitation. You should already know what I'm asking you for, or something like that. It's like, yeah. She assumed, or the Emperor assumed she should already know what she was trying to ask her when she brought the Kelpians out.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't.
Burnham should have known that that's what. I think she should have had the idea that when she was picking which of the Kelpians that it was going to be to eat, given that
I disagree. I thought she had no idea because of the genuine look of surprise when she finds out that the cook on her on Giorgio's ship, the Emperor's ship, makes the best Kelpian. And then it hits her like a brick wall. I thought she genuinely thought the Kelpian was going to serve a different purpose.
I don't know what purpose she could have thought. And
that's why I mentioned I thought maybe she was picking out her servant for when her time on the Empress's ship, since she had her own Kelpian servant on the Shenzo.
Yeah, but she should have known better that this is the mirror, or this is a fucked up universe that she's in, and that the Kelpians were literally a species bred to be eaten, that they would probably do the same.
Yeah, and just because you know the universe is fucked up, you don't, you know, always want to believe that your mirror counterparts are gonna
do fucked up shit. Yeah, no, I think
that's... be that fucked up.
Yeah, I think that's.
I disagree. No, I disagree with. I think she had more faith in them than she. They're pretty fucked up, and she knows that. But I didn't think they would stoop. I don't think she thought they would stoop to that level. Slavery, okay. Eating your slaves, horse of a different color. I mean, either way, it's fucked up.
Well, again, keep in mind, this was a species bred to be eaten, so I'm sure they don't taste bad.
Yeah, but
it's like a cow becomes intelligent.
True, but I disagree.
Hmm. All right.
Okay, anyways, so something we have alluded to so far this episode is pretty much Stemmons. Throughout this episode, Stemmons is in the mycelial network, and he meets his counterpart Stemmons, where he thinks, you know, Stemmons from the Discovery thinks he's dead and is on his way to heaven, and Stemmons from the Mirror Universe, who was working on the same project or a similar project, ended up going through similar circumstances and being stuck in the mycelial network.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting exchange, because that's where Stemmons finds out that his partner, Colbert, was killed. He was like, I just thought that was a dream. And the other Stemmons is like, no, that was all real. You watched him get killed.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be very important to Colbert appearing in the mycelial network would be very important to getting both Stemmonses out of their comas.
Yeah, but he also warns him that not to trust the other one, because he's part of the reason why the network is, well, I guess dying, because that's when they eventually go into the explanation that I guess he had like a rash on him that he kind of showed him as kind of a visual, like we're sick. And then, you know, they looked over at the rest of the network, and it's something that they're doing is killing the network. And he's almost warning them of the dangers of what they're doing.
So, okay, hold on. What Federation Stemmons is doing is killing the network, or what?
I think what the Mirror Universe is doing. I think it's kind of a combination of both, but I think it's mostly the Mirror Universe is doing. Because he did blame the Mirror Universe that, you know, there's the one responsible for it.
I mean, that's interesting, because I do recall Mirror Universe Stemmons having the rash, and because when Stemmons wakes up, the first thing he does is goes to engineering and checks on their spore habitat and sees that it's dying. But I didn't realize what both Stemmons was doing was kind of destroying the mycelial network, so that way they're not really going to be able to jump anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that also explains why this technology wouldn't be further developed, or why it wouldn't be explored upon in the future timelines, because they were destroyed.
You lose that ability, yeah. It's like destroying a highway. You can't.
Similar to that, I don't know if you remember this, but maybe the audience remembers. Similar to the Omega Particle, that in their experiments to develop new and faster means of transportation or technology, they end up destroying the very means of transportation.
Yeah.
So they have to keep it in secrecy and hide and suppress it.
Yeah, that's true. I think that was the last episode. It might have been two episodes ago, but I mean, and I'm referring to when we discussed it. I don't remember when you brought up the Omega Particle or if that made the final cut of the episode.
I'm sure it did.
I think it did, but I don't remember. Sometimes I cut a good portion of the show out, like 5 or 10 minutes of what we record. So yeah, all right. So all right,
well,
how did this episode end? Oh yeah, it was Lorca coming out and beating the guy who he nailed his sister. I think he killed him.
Oh yeah, he definitely killed him. He's not gonna leave him alive.
Yeah, because that was the big reveal that
Yeah, that Lorca's alive.
And we didn't mention that L'Oreal did some Jedi mind trick to kind of clean up Ash Tyler's mind.
Do what?
I said we didn't talk about how L'Oreal did like a Jedi mind trick to clean up Ash Tyler's mind because he was having both personalities as Ash Tyler and Volk was killing him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that, actually.
I did, too.
Because she said that Volk was pretty much dead at that point, that she eliminated what was left of Volk to save his mind.
Yeah, so now we're just really... I mean, it's almost like a clone Ash Tyler. Because we know it's not the original one. It's Volk's body transformed into a human to look like Ash Tyler, and then
a stronger
digital consciousness. Yeah.
Yeah, stronger, you know, Klingon Ash Tyler.
Yeah. Very weird.
Mm-hmm.
Very weird.
All right. Well, is there anything else?
I'm trying to think what else happened in this episode. I mean, there are these three episodes. It was a lot of reveals, a lot of mirror universe. Tyler's not who he claims to be. Lorca's not who he claims to be. Georgia is the emperor of the mirror universe. No, I don't think I have anything else to cover. What did you think of these three episodes coming out of the mid-season finale?
They weren't bad. You know, now that we kind of go through it a little bit more, nitpick it, you know, there's a little bit more problems than I originally thought. But, you know, they're definitely improvements on to the first half of the season, especially when it comes to consistency with the Star Trek storyline or timeline. You know, this one just makes a little bit more sense, even though it's a little bit more consistent, even though I would have liked a little bit more, you know, a little bit finer on smoother edges on the finer details of the things, but you know, it was pretty good.
Nothing could be perfect, but I think, you know, I came out of this and I didn't care. I mean, 10 didn't pull me in like 11 and 12 did. I was intrigued and interested, and you know, it was about halfway through. Yeah, whenever her and Tyler beam down to meet the rebels, that's kind of when these three episodes got interesting for me. So pretty much the first half I didn't care about. The second half I did care about. I mean, not that I didn't care. It just didn't quite do it for it.
Yeah. I think it's harder to keep your attention.
Yeah. The series and season one got off to a rocky start, but I think they're doing okay right now.
Yeah, I mean,
it's getting better, and I know I used to give it crap, and it's not as bad as a show as it as I recall it being. Now we can get to season two; it could blow me away, and that could all change.
It could. The way that I think about it is that it needs to be a progression through, you know, each episode. You know, that you would like to see it get a little bit better.
It's kind of plateaued at this point where it's not really getting worse, but it's not really improving either.
Well, the way that I was thinking of it is the first half of the season, they kind of got, you know, they got over their first hump. They got the first step, you know, improved a bit, but not really a lot, you know. And then these last three episodes, it kind of went over. They took another step forward. It got a little bit better, but they're really not progressing a lot through these and improving throughout each of these episodes. So there's some, but just not enough to.
It's at a plateau right now. They're
putting
out consistent episodes, but it's not getting better and it's not really getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how I would describe it. So
that's how I did describe it, and you said no. That's...
Is it? Yes. No, I don't think I said no. I mean, it's similar, but...
Well, you said that's not how I would describe it. It's...
Well, no, I said how this is how I would describe it, not no, that's not how I would describe it.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever. I mean, it's just, it's kind of plateaued, but it's got some slight improvement. Like, it's progressed a little bit over, just not really noticeably.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
Shelly.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley! Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right, well, what do we got in store for next week's episode?
Next week, we are going to wrap up Discovery Season 1 with the last three episodes. Episode 13, entitled What's Past is Prologue. Then we got 14, which is the War Within the War, or the War Without the War Within. And then the finale is Will You Take My Hand and Bone Me? Actually, it's just Will You Take My Hand? But... That's what we have to look forward to on the next Deep Space High.
All right, cool. Well, I guess that'll do it for this episode then. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yep, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High, hashtag Tacos and Trek, and also be sure to follow us on Facebook using the Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV review page, and follow our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow either one of those platforms, you can stay up to date with the latest announcements whenever I remember to post the latest announcements.
Yeah, and if you guys want to leave a review, that really helps get better content out to you guys, get you guys a better listening experience, and please be sure to leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast. It really helps boost viewership.
Yeah, it could boost our charts and
get more people
get us out there.
Yeah, it gets more people listening to the show. So
that's what we want. We need listeners if we want to keep the show going.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's just Chris and I talking, which we could just do on the phone.
Yeah, we really could.
And no editing, so.
I know, right? Save us several hours.
So, yeah, please share and like the podcast.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm going to go eat some tacos.
And live long and prosper in the mirror.